Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
All right, we are here in the middle of May already, and we have a guest with us today, Rick Davis. Rick Davis is a retired battalion chief from the Loveland Fire Rescue Authority in Colorado. He served as a firefighter for 37 years and with the Loveland Fire Rescue Authority for 29. During his time with Loveland Fire, Rick led several teams and served as a shift commander and training chief. He is the founder of the Fire Officer Leadership Academy, providing leadership, training, coaching, and mentoring to fire department officers. And on top of all of that, Rick is the author of the Amazon International best-selling book, The Furnace of Leadership Development, and he and his daughter co-host a podcast together called Firehouse Talks with Jersey Rick, Igniting Leadership Excellence. He's a veteran of both the United States Air Force and the United States Marine Corps. Originally from New Jersey, he now lives in Loveland, Colorado with his wife and dog, Java. And he has two adult daughters who live nearby. He's a student of leadership and military history and finds studying the Gettysburg Campaign of 1863 of great interest. And then at the end, we'll share about how you can invite Rick to speak at your organization. So welcome, Rick. Rick's a friend of mine. We have shared similarities around authorship and leadership and different interests that we both seem to have conversations around. So Rick, why don't you share a little bit more about yourself and what you're up to today?
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. A little bit more about myself and my wife and I now, we this year in September, we will be celebrating 38 years of marriage. And we just returned from vacation in North Carolina. That's where we got engaged in Atlantic Beach, North Carolina. So we were able to go back out to that spot. There's a rock jetty out there at Atlantic Beach. So we visited that. And so that's going to be quite a milestone for her and I. And because I was stationed down there in North Carolina and she was here in Colorado when we were introduced. We had a long distance relationship. We didn't have this venue, Zoom, cell phones, any of that. When we were introduced, it was all landline and handwriting letters. But here we are, you know, 38 years down the road. And as you mentioned, you know, we have two daughters. One of our daughters is married to a fellow who's career Air Force. He's got just a little over a year left. And but fortunately, they're all very close to us. And then that's great. From the professional side, I got my start in the fire service at a very early age. Had my first ride in a fire engine when I was 3 years old, and that took off from there. The following year, there was a large fire in a small town down the Delaware Bay, and when the trucks were coming down from other communities, my dad would take me out in the street and, you know, we'd wave at them. They'd wave back. And then after that, my dad gave me his badge from when he'd been a volunteer firefighter down there in South Jersey. And so when he was home, we would chase the trucks when there was a fire. My Aunt Phyllis and Uncle Cliff lived next door. She worked for the local International Farmall dealership. And one of the guys there was named Art French. Everybody knew him as Frenchie. And he was on the fire company. He would send stuff home when Aunt Phyllis, the quick catalogs, things like that. And they'd make arrangements to get me down to the firehouse on drill nights. And my dad liked to drive around over Philadelphia. So we never stopped any place. We just drive. But he would drive past firehouses. And that continued throughout the years, my interest in the fire service. And Erin, as you and I have talked about in the past, which led to me writing a guest article for your newsletter last year. It was related to my dad when he died. I was 14, came home from school and found him on the floor dead from a heart attack. It was his fifth one, and he was very young, 41 years old. And so when they put him in the back of an ambulance, that's when I vowed, this is what I'm going to do, you know, for a career. And that was further fueled later, well, actually prior to my dad's death, the television show Emergency had come out about two firefighter paramedics in Los Angeles County Fire Department. And so that added to my desire. And then a year after my dad died, there was a gentleman from FDNY up in New York City wrote a book called Report from Engine Company 82. And that's like, I got to do this. I got to do this job. And I had already started hanging out the firehouse down the street from where I was growing up. And ultimately, they started letting me do just some of the things that nobody else liked to do: sweep the floors, clean up the firehouse, wash hose, and stuff like that. When I turned 18, I put my application in for, it was a volunteer fire department. I put my application in for the volunteer fire department, and that's when I entered the delayed enlistment program in the Air Force. Initially didn't get into firefighting in the Air Force. I literally had to fight my way into it, but ultimately I did. And then the Air Force wanted to send me back to my original career field, and I said no. I got out and I went to work at Federal Civil Service for the Air Force as a firefighter. Left to go to college, ran out of money, and that's how I wound up in the Marine Corps. I needed a job. And I was in firefighting in the Marine Corps. And then ultimately, they came to me and said, we have too many firefighters at your rank. You're going to have to pick another job. And so I picked three, didn't get them. They put me where they wanted me, and that was aviation operations, which ultimately, as much as I did not like the idea, ultimately I had a long-term career benefit for me because that's where I learned how to type, and that I had to type on an old IBM Selectric. And also I learned how to use computers in that career field. And so that definitely benefited me long-term. And as I mentioned here earlier, when I was stationed down there in North Carolina, that's when I was introduced to my wife. I got out of the Marine Corps. It jacked up my knees, so I was discharged on a medical. Came out here to Colorado, and Deb and I got married, and then eventually wound up at Loveland Fire Rescue, and that's where I spent nearly the last 30 years there, working my way up through the ranks. My last 15 years, well, I was a battalion chief. The majority of that time was as a shift commander. I did spend 15 months as the training chief, and I had the privilege of being involved in a number of different programs. Two of my favorite, top favorites, was I ran the hazardous materials team for 8 years, and then I ran the wildland firefighting program for 7 years. And then retired May of 2020, 5 years ago. But it was while my last year on the fire department is when I wrote my book, The Furnace of Leadership Development, and that's when I started my business. However, starting a business and being able to work the business is two completely different things when you're working a 48-hour shift. And there wasn't a lot of business building going on. So I didn't full get into building the business until I retired. And so that's what I've been doing now for the past year is, working with firefighters individually or small groups. Just returned from our trip to North Carolina, and while I was down there, I had the opportunity to deliver an 8-hour presentation to a regional conference, all firefighters, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. So that's what I've been doing over these past 5 years since I left the fire service.
Wow, such a rich career experience and personal experience. Thank you so much for your service.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure to do it.
Yeah, on both ends, in fighting fires and then also training and teaching firefighters and then also serving in the military as well. So that, thank you so much for that.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
It seems like a theme running throughout your life, Rick, is just being of service.
Yeah, you could say that. And it extends beyond the fire service. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to teach adult classes in the churches we've been involved with. And currently, we're involved with a church in Fort Collins, and just finished up a men's Bible study in about mid-April. And then last August, an opportunity popped up, and my wife and I picked up the singles group in our church. So we've been working with them. And we average about 17 singles in the group. It's considered a college and career group, but we've only got a couple college people in there. And now with CSU graduating the other day, we've lost one of them. She went back home to Louisiana and would be back in August. And so we run anywhere between 17 and 25 in the group, and most all of them are career. And so it's a really good group, and I really enjoy doing that. And both my wife and I enjoy doing that. And my wife also, my wife Deb, she's very service oriented.
Yeah. In addition to all the service, it seems like you've been able to see the themes in your life and how they equate to where you are now. And since we are a coaching podcast, I'm curious if there are any coaching strategies that you wish were available to you when you had to pivot from the military or had to make changes or shifts. Is there anything in particular that you think would have been helpful to you then?
Yeah, absolutely, Aaron. And I can address that from the standpoint when I separated from the Marine Corps, stepped into civilian life, and then also when I retired from a Love on Fire rescue. So I'll start with the military. There was a little bit of transitional issues when I left active duty in the Air Force, but not a lot, because all I did is I quit wearing a green uniform for the Air Force and I put on a blue firefighter uniform for the Air Force. So I was still in that same environment. And that wasn't too big of a transition for me. When I left, though, to go to college, that was much more difficult transition. Coming out of the Marine Corps to civilian life, that was a wow. I left a highly structured life. I mean, you knew what was expected of you. We knew what the job was. We knew what the ultimate mission was. We knew why we were there. I mean, it spit and polish. And then I came out into a civilian world of complete disarray. I was initially, before I got into Love and Fire, I was working for a small company down in Longmont. And the lack of discipline and structure, it was crazy. Transitioning out of the fire service has been very, very difficult. So the question about the coaching strategies, what I have learned over the last 5 years about coaching, because something I did not mention is within 6 days of me retiring from Love and Fire Rescue, I became a member of the John Maxwell Certified Leadership Team. And that's where I got certified as a coach and a trainer and a speaker through them. And the coaching tips and strategies and philosophies that I have learned from the Maxwell team over the last 5 years would have been of a tremendous help for me personally, separating from the Air Force, the Marine, certainly the Marine Corps, but now the fire service. And that, Aaron, has not been an easy transition for me. Yesterday, our church is up in Fort Collins, and we went to lunch, and then we were going over to Sam's. And on the way there, down the street, I could see the Poudre Fire Authority engine and ladder truck pulling out on the East Harmony. And I watched them as they came by. I told my wife, I said, "I miss that. I want to be back doing that. I miss the camaraderie. I miss that opportunity to be able to respond on emergencies and help and, get that sense of satisfaction." However, tying that into your question, the coaching aspects that I have learned have definitely helped me. And they've helped me from the air standpoint of not only knowing how to ask other people better questions, but how to ask myself better questions as well, to put it into the correct perspective. Because you can't do firefighting until you're in your 70s or your 80s. Well, I'll add a caveat there. There's a number of smaller communities in the United States where there are volunteer firefighters in their 70s. And that doesn't go very well for them. So that's been a toughie, but the coaching aspect that I've learned again has helped me more.
I'm wondering, like, what is a question that you asked yourself, or you even ask yourself now, that helps you stay buoyant?
Rick, what is your purpose? Are you living out your purpose? Are you living the purpose that you put down in writing in April of 2015? And LaShawn, let me give you a little bit of background with that. Is we had gotten a new fire chief in 2014, and right off the bat, he said, I want to get the command staff together so you guys can determine what your purpose is. And I was telling my wife, I said, man, I'm old enough now. If I don't know what my purpose is, I'm one jacked up guy. And so I was resistant to the idea of what was going to happen with this. And there was a homework that went along with it and really was, very beneficial to me. And I even led into some of writing my book. But we got into the seminar, and it was the chief officers. And we had a civilian who was doing the admin and the finance stuff, and she was in there with us. It was a day and a half seminar. And in the end of that, the lady that was working with us, we went through several exercises, and the intent was to narrow your purpose down to a short statement. And my purpose statement is to impact people through teaching and leading. So that's a question I ask myself is, Rick, are you living that purpose? And do you still have that purpose? And where's that desire at? And so those are some of those questions that I ask myself to bring me back on track, to know that, yes, I am. And then periodically, well, I'll sit down and think about, okay, who am I impacting? At the end of the year, I sit down and I do a year-end review. And in that year-end review, I go back through my calendar and I write down all the different meetings that I've had with people. And that helps me to say, okay, I am on track, asking those questions and then doing that review. I am on track. And I still wish that I was in the firehouse, but reality, I can't be.
You have such an intentional way of living with thinking about your purpose, but this calendaring idea, I love that because it's a way to look back and see not only impact, but the relationships that have been formed, and then also what one has learned from those too. So I might have to borrow your idea here and try that myself and look back on the past year and really glean what I've learned from other people in that way. You've had a strong calling and purpose in life in terms of your fire history and then the work that you're doing to help others right now. Who has impacted you the most throughout all of that?
I mentioned that gentleman, Frenchie, at the beginning, and he took me under his wing. He was the guy that would man the radio and answer the telephone at the fire. It was a volunteer fire department, so we're not there all the time. But he took me under his wing, and after they figured out, hey, everybody knew everybody where I grew up at in New Jersey, small town. But it's like initially, hey, what's Ricky Davis doing down here? And when they found out that I was serious, it's like, okay, they're letting me hang around. But Frenchie had a an impact on me because of the fact that he was letting me do these different things. And then there was another gentleman named Rich Gardner. Rich was a retired lieutenant from the Philadelphia Fire Department. And I forget how I got connected with Rich. He had had several heart attacks and he was medically retired off the job. But he would spend time with me on the phone talking about a career in the fire service and encouraging me, to keep going and to pursue that. And so those are two from, my earlier years. And then throughout, there's a gentleman, he wrote the foreword to my book. His name's Paul Callan. Paul retired from the Marine Corps as a colonel, and a friend of mine who was working in dispatch here at Loveland, he introduced me to Paul. And my friend's name was Travis. Travis is Travis Tebbe. He's a retired Marine Corps helicopter pilot, and he went to work in dispatch here. And I approached him at the when I was a training chief at the end of 2013 it was, and asked him if he would be willing to come over to Loveland Fire and teach leadership. And he said, no, I can't. He said, my plate is so full, I can't do this, Rick. He said, but I've got three people that I can introduce you to and see which one that you would like to use. And he said, I've got one out of the three that I would highly recommend. He says, but I'm not going to tell you who. So he sent me the information, and I checked all three of them out on LinkedIn. And what I saw with Paul Callan, I liked. And I said, hey, Travis, I like what I see about this guy, Paul Callan. And he said, that's the one that I would pick, Rick. And he had worked with Paul, and so we had a phone meeting at the end of 2013. He's out in San Diego, so in January of 2014, I went out for a conference and we met face to face, and so we've had a friendship ever since that time. We ultimately did bring Paul in here to teach leadership to our lieutenants and captains and chiefs at Loveland Fire Rescue, but Paul would spend time with me. Our contact has kind of strayed apart a little bit because of our schedules, but Paul would spend time on the phone with me and mentor me. And he asked me a question one day. And I mean, it was just such a, for me, it was a powerful question. And that was, Rick, what do you, let me see if I get this straight. What is your reason for believing that leadership is leadership? And I said, huh,
Good question.
That's really a thought-provoking question. And then he rephrased that, why do you believe what you do about leadership? And I've never thought about it in that perspective before. And he left it at that. And so I picked up a moleskin journal and I just started writing. Little did I know that what I was writing down, I would later on pull from those pages of my moleskin journal and incorporate it into my book, The Furnace of Leadership Development.
So you had this book that you were writing about what you think about leadership, and that kind of morphed into and was part of your now best-selling book, The Furnace of Leadership. Are
Yes.
there other parts of your life, Rick, where things have kind of developed from like maybe a seed, like a question or a curiosity, and then developed into something more?
I'm sure there is from a question that right now off the top of my head from that curiosity standpoint, I'm struggling to come up with an answer. I had coach down in part he's down in Parker. His name's Gary Barnes. Well, Gary asked the question, are you a participant or are you a spectator? And that's a thought-provoking question because then I look at it as, okay, am I actually, participating in what is available out there with my missing opportunities, or am I just sitting up in the stands watching the game as life passes by? So that was a very thought-provoking question.
Yeah, and it also, since we're on this relational aspect, I want to kind of ask one more question on that wavelength, because you brought up your wife earlier on throughout the podcast at multiple points where you would go home and tell her something, and it sounds like she has played also a really integral role. And so, is there something she has said or that has asked that really made you think about something a little bit differently?
My wife, Deb, has just been a godsend. The Bible talks about a helpmeet. And certainly, Deb has been a helpmeet. We've had a amazing marriage and relationship. We've gone through, hard times. Our youngest daughter right now, she got T-boned in May of 2013, had her driver's license for 2 weeks, and I was the lucky guy on duty that got to respond to that accident. And then later that year, we dealt with me having acute kidney failure and cancer. And then Deb has had some health problems, and we went through with both of her parents dying. Deb's a very godly lady, and she has a way of putting things into a biblical perspective. And give you a good example to answer your question is building a business, as both of you know, is difficult. But when you're building a business and you're living off of your retirement, and you don't want to be living off of your retirement, you want to have an income where you can cut back on that. That created a lot of angst in my life, as wondering, what in the world is going on here? Or am I going to, wind up stocking shelves down at Home Depot? And I don't want to come across as if there's anything wrong with that, because there's not. I'm looking at, my desire to work with firefighters, and are the finances going to draw me away from that? So Deb sits down with, and we talk a lot. I mean, and that's a strength of our marriage, is just talking, talking, talking. And she really put it succinctly. She said, "Rick," she said, "are you trusting God? Are you needlessly worrying? And what's your basis for worry?" And just asking those questions, wow, she's right. That's just one example out of our nearly 38 years of marriage. A funny story, back in 1993, it was 1993, I took a promotional exam here at Love and Fire Rescue for lieutenant, and I didn't get it. And I sat down with the fire chief, and he pointed out some things that I needed to tighten up in my life, including how you handle your Jersey attitude, and shooting your mouth off too much. And it's like, huh, okay. Next day, Deb and I are driving down to Denver around I-25, and I'm telling her about the conversation I had with the fire chief. And she says, huh, we've been married 10 years at that point. She says, huh, isn't it amazing how I've been trying to tell you that for the last 10 years, but the fire chief says that to you in a 15-minute conversation, and you listen. It's things like that. And it's great. Deb also, she also works with a lot of ladies on her end. She does ladies' Bible studies, and she's working right now individually with, I think, four different ladies. It's a great relationship that we have.
Yeah, she sounds like a really insightful and wise woman.
She is.
When she asked you, "Are you trusting God?" I thought that is such a poignant question to ask, especially when you're in a space of worry or uncertainty. For her to have the wherewithal to say, "Hey, are you trusting God?" And I'm curious to know, how did that affect the course of your thinking and your thoughts around being re retired and building this business?
That, I wouldn't say it was a gut punch, but it was certainly a reality check that, I had to ask myself, am I trusting God, or am I, worrying so much here? And there was a Bible verse. I've never been much on picking a word of the year. I know a lot of people were, and I never was much on that until last year. And I didn't settle on a word, but as I settled on a verse out of the book of Psalms 37, verse 3, it says, "Trust in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness." And so, coupling what Deb said to me with that verse, and then also last April, I became part of a men's cohort, a small men's cohort. There's a gentleman up here in Loveland named Dan Anderson, and he has Kingdom Way Ministries, and he runs a men's cohort, and he's got a lady that works with him, and she runs a ladies' cohort. So we had a retreat last June, and it was really good. And there was about 14 of us men. I think that's how many were in the cohort. And so some of these things came up, and it was just, with me being in a different environment, and I've always been an open book, but just it was a different environment for me, that where we were in Wyoming, that where I could really grapple with this thing. And On the Saturday of the retreat, Dan had us go out and pick up a rock so we could write on it. And I got it right here on my desk, and I've got that Bible verse written on it. But below it, I have, this is not 1983 and 1984. That is past and done. And the correlation with that is that's when I had left the fire department to go to college, ran out of money, really struggled financially until I got back into the fire department. And so I would get into this spot that where I would automatically go back to those 2 years and start worrying. And so all these things, came into play. And Deb knows about that. And Deb knows about that background. And so, that Bible verse there, what Deb said, being involved in this men's cohort and, having that group right there hold me accountable. And Deb holds me accountable too. But it's in a different way than a group of men. And so that's how all that's come about.
I love all of the stories in today's recording, because they showcase the interdependence. Rick's not, you're not saying I did this all on my own. You're like, oh, I went and did this training, and I went and met with this person, and then Deb told me this, and I think that that's really powerful, especially for younger people potentially to hear that you're not doing things alone. You must learn how to be interdependent, and so I'm segueing on that, your book, because I know that you had support with that, just like I did, an editor and those type of things. But your book really showcases Rick and who he is. So why don't you tell us about your book?
My book, funny story with that is for years, Deb would say, you ought to write a book, you ought to write a book. And then when the girls got a little bit older, Dad, you ought to write a book, you ought to write a book. And when I got promoted to battalion chief, my practice was to make fire station visits and spend time with the crews. And I'm a very, very strong advocate of that not only occurring in the fire service, but in any work environment. The supervisors, the leaders, you need to spend time with the people, because that's how you make the connection. But I would show up at the stations, and the crews would put on coffee, and I'd pass on official information, and then get to know them. Hey, what's going on? So forth like that, and share different leadership stories, mentoring. Well, a lot of them started saying, "Hey, Chief, you need to write a book. You need to write a book." I was like, I don't need to do that. Well, we had looked into it. Deb and I had looked into it, and then we were into it would have been 28, 2017, 2017. We were talking about it on a Wednesday night, and you'll see why I remember Wednesday night here in a second. And we were talking about this again on a Wednesday night, and Deb said, "Yeah, I listened to a lady on the radio, and she's got a business, and she's in Denver. And she helps writers. And so, what's the name of the business?" She couldn't remember. "Do you remember the lady's name?" "Well, I think her first name was Polly." And so while Deb was brainstorming on who it was, I got on my phone and I searched it. And it's like, "Oh, here." I said, "Polly Latofsky?" She said, "Yeah, that's her. And she's got a business called My Word Publishing. She's down in Denver." So here's where the Wednesday, I looked at her event calendar. It's like, "Hey, she's hosting a self-publishing 101 lunch and learn tomorrow down at a First Watch in Denver." And Thursdays was our that next day was our normal chief's meeting, but it had been canceled. And so I said, "Let's go." So I signed us both up and we went down. There was about 15 people there. And Polly lined out the differences between writing a manuscript and attempting to get an agent and a big publisher versus self-publishing. And she had her business partner with her, lady named Susie Schaefer. And afterwards, Deb and I talked to Polly and Susie and Aaron and LaShawn. It's one of these things that bang, bang, bang. I find myself standing out in the parking lot of the restaurant looking at Deb saying, "Guess I'm writing a book." And it came into play like that. And so we got tied in with Susie, and Polly introduced me to two different writing coaches. And the one that I settled on, her name is Alexandra O'Connell. Her business is called Your Resonant Wordsmith. Alexandra and I, we connected immediately. When I was on her website, I looked at the area code from her cell phone and I said, "All right, I think I know where that's from." Sure enough, yeah, she's a Jersey girl. And so we drove down the and we met Alexandra at Boyer's Coffee up there in North Denver. And yeah, we clicked right away. And Alexandra had a program, and she said, "Before I agree to take you on, Rick," she says, "I want to see your writing style. So I want you to send me 20 pages." And she says, "Look at it as your first chapter of your book." And I did that. And she said, "Yep, I like your style of writing. I can work with you." And so she came on board as my writing coach and then ultimately one of my editors. As we moved along through that process, Susie got more involved in the back end of everything, with the ISBNs, Library of Congress, all the stuff that goes with Amazon, looking at the copy editor, who's going to do the layout work, who's going to do the cover art, and so forth like that. And so, with all that going on, all I had to concentrate on was just writing. And I would write, and I would send Alexandra once a month a chapter. Initially, she would send it back with recommendations, and then in, I mean, big, bold, red letters, "Do not edit. Keep writing. Do not edit." After about 5 months, I think she figured out that I realized I wasn't editing, and so it just kept writing. So there was an entire team effort with the book and the people involved with the book. Susie ultimately had to move back to California because of some family health issues out there. But Polly got a hold of me and says, "Susie's moving. I'm helping her start her own business. I don't know about your project. That you, if you want to stay with me, that's great. But if you want to go with Susie, I won't get upset with that." And so, because we've been working with Susie, we stayed with her. But to attest to the integrity and the character of Polly, when I did my book launch and I invited Polly and she came. So that was a situation where somebody could have really got ticked off and said, "Hey, you started out with my company and I know I'm helping her out, but you're going with her, I'm losing your business." It wasn't that way at all. There was no envy and no jealousy on Polly's part. And so I really respect her for that. I mean, that really demonstrates character and integrity on her part.
There's so much synergy in this, so much synergistic events happening in your stories. And it, yeah, it's just listening to your stories, it's just seeing how all the things are playing out. The canceled Chiefs meeting on the day of the event that Polly was doing. It's all so synergistic, and I find that really fascinating.
You're right. And I love the fact that it was a team effort. And that points back to what you were saying, Aaron. It's not an individual thing. And I love the team concept, and fire service and the military is a team. And you talked about, younger people sometimes think that they can do it all on their own. Well, they're fooling themselves, if they think they can. That old Frank Sinatra song, "I did it my way." Well, that's, yeah, but we'll see how well that works out for people. I've been down that path, I did it my way. And it's like, yeah, I did it my way and Rick screwed it up.
That's the funny thing about those. There's a certain Aaron, to go back to what Aaron said about interdependence. I think there's this, you have this drive and this passion that you've had since you were three, when you were, riding in fire engines, and it just seemed to be something that you've been drawn to, and you have this passion. But in that passion and that drive for serving others and, working in teams and mentoring and leadership, you've had so many different people in your life who have contributed to that and expanded on that. And I think that's something that it's easy to forget. Like when you're looking at a song like Frank Sinatra's I Did It My Way, you know that there are so many different people or different things in play that in the song itself. You know, you can't just sing that kind of a song by yourself. He had, you know, an orchestra behind him and he had, you know, people recording, you know. So no, he did it his way, but he had a lot of help.
Yeah, so we're kind of coming up on time, but I have one more question to ask about service because it was asked of me this morning, and I just think it's really relevant to this conversation and just popped into my brain like a second ago about Rick, how do you define service?
I define service as putting others before yourself, looking at their needs, whether that's an individual or looking at the needs of the group, looking at the needs of the organization. We have to be selfless to serve. People who are prideful, who are egotistical, who are arrogant, service is not part of their vocabulary. They expect people to serve them. But for us to serve people, we got to drive a stake through our ego. And we got to look at who is in front of us and what is that need that they have. I mentioned my daughter, my youngest daughter, Emily. She still has many medical needs. And, you know, so what do I need to do as her father to serve her? What do I need to do with the singles group in our church to serve them? I'm involved with a Bible study with some of the firefighters. I get in there and I'm clearly the oldest guy in there. And most of them have all worked for me at one point or another when I was a battalion chief. And so it's a, how can I go in there? And I pray, how can I go into this thing and serve the people who are there? And so it boils down to service is putting other people first.
Yeah, the power of recognizing that and prayer combined probably make that a very powerful for experience for the people whom you serve too. So with that, we're going to circle in on the end of our episode, which is a coaching nugget of wisdom. And so what that is each of us go around and say one thing that they learned from today's conversation or that really stood out to them that's related to coaching that our listeners can take forward. So usually it goes LaShawn and me, and then Rick, you'll have your opportunity there at the end. So LaShawn, do you have anything you want to share on the coaching nuggets of wisdom?
There's so much here. I'm thinking, as I was listening to Rick, and it's just been so profound. It gives me pause because it's so profound and there's so many layers there. And what I have found in listening to your story, Rick, and about leadership, about service, I want to encourage our listeners to take an inventory of their lives and where they see their purpose. Just to go back to what Rick said, what is your purpose? To really go back to that and see if you can narrow that down to one sentence the way or one phrase the way Rick did. Find your purpose. What is your purpose?
Thanks, LaShawn. I would say consider the concept of the ego potentially and how Rick said, you know, drive a stake through that ego, but consider how that shows up that prevents you from being your best self. And how can you then address that? And maybe sometimes it's a fear-based thing or you know, generational trauma or things that really stick around that keep people from living out their, you know, best lives. But maybe an opportunity from a coaching lens is to kind of look at where the ego is driving the bus and where you can drive the bus to not only help yourself, but help others as well.
Yeah, for myself, it was a reminder of the people who have been involved in my life. And I had mentioned that exercise that we did in 2015 in the fire department, and the homework involved a timeline breaking our lives up into different segments and writing down who had impacted our life. I was shocked, and I've been blessed with a pretty good memory. I came up with 54 people, 54
Wow.
people that had impacted my life. So one of the things that I do, Aaron and LaShawn, is I encourage people, just get a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil. Don't do it on the computer. You write it down because it sticks more. And think back as far as you can go and write down the names of the people that have impacted you, because that'll show everybody that is involved in your life.
Awesome. Thank you, Rick. And then can you share with us where we can find you or contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is fireofficerleadershipacademy.com. My email is rick@fireofficerleadershipacademy.com. And I'm also on Facebook as just Rick Davis. And I'm on LinkedIn as Rick Davis as well. There's millions of Rick Davises, it seems like.
Thank you so much for sharing space with us today, Rick.
Well,
It's
thank
been
you.
so profound. And just as a reminder, Rick Davis has been here speaking with us. He's the author of the international best-selling book, The Furnace of Leadership Development, former battalion chief of the Loveland Fire Rescue Authority here in Colorado, native New Jersey. I don't know, is it New Jerseyite?
Yeah,
New Jersey.
Jerseyite,
New Jerseyite
yeah.
and family and community member and heart of service. So check out his book, get in contact with him for leadership training opportunities, and we'll be seeing Rick around Colorado.
Thank you, Aaron, LaShawn. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.